Okay, good morning, everyone. Welcome back to this week's edition of Insights into the Weekly Parsha. So appreciate our opportunity to learn together Thursday mornings, making them enriched, uplifted, and inspired, hopefully, to prepare ourselves for a beautiful up-and-coming Shabbos. Parshas Chukas, our Parsha this Shabbos, can be found in the Art Scroll Blue Stone Chumashim in the Hebrew page 838 and in the English 839. Thank you all for joining us this morning for our learning. Our learning this morning has been generously anonymously sponsored for the Refuah Shalema of our dear beloved Chef Meir Rappaport, Meir Yechiel Ben Leah. He should have continued good health, a Refuah Shalema, speedy recovery from his most recent incident, and please God, just only Simchas, happy times for community, family, and friends all together. We have an action-packed, jam-packed Parsha this morning, sharing some insights, some thoughts, some perspectives for our lives as we do each and every week. So let's begin with what I think is the episode of all episodes, really the highlight, the climax, the apex of this parsha that leaves us a bit dumbfounded, a little bit uncertain, certainly left in our tracks, trying to figure out what in the world is going on in Parshas Chukas. We relate the episode that is among the most misunderstood stories in the entire Torah, where we try to understand and figure, to discern, to figure out the story of Moshe Rabbeinu and the rock in the episode, of course, as it has its repercussions, knowing that Moshe Rabbeinu, because of the events as they took place, the difference between speaking to the rock and striking the rock, the punishment was for him and for Moshe and his brother Aaron, for them to go and remain on the outside of Eretz Yisrael, to not enter into the Holy Land for which they had been hopeful and wanting so desperately to enter into it. So that was the punishment. They, because of what they did, because of what they didn't do, they would not be able to enter into the land. Okay, so of course we know this. Most of us probably have learned in early ages and certainly different stages that Moshe was punished because he was told to speak to the rock. And the reason why he was told to speak to the rock is because the people were thirsty. They were complaining. They needed water. They wanted to survive, obviously, but he hit the rock instead. And as a result, he's not able to enter together with Aaron and Eretz Yisrael. Now, if we think about it for a minute, if we can, it seems like a very difficult concept to accept. Like, we have to think about what that means. Here you have Moshe Rabbeinu, who's the shepherd of all shepherds. He's the Navi of all Nevi'im. He's the prophet of all prophets. He's the Manig. He's the leader of the Jewish people. He's the greatest one who ever lived. And he has the clearest perception, the rendezvous, panim el panim, Chazal tell us, the Torah tells us that he speaks face to face without riddles, without remiza, without hinting, without alluding to. It's straightforward. It's clarity. It's a perception of the Ribbono Shel Olam more than any person at any time in the history of the world. So if in fact that's true, so how do we understand this episode? It's difficult to understand. It's difficult to accept because it's actually seemingly inconceivable that a Kodesh Baruch Hu would tell him to do something and he should be told to speak to the rock and he would do another thing, knowingly that in this case, instead of speaking to it, he would strike it. Like, why would he do that? Who is this that we're talking about? We're talking about Moshe Rabbeinu. We're talking about this incredibly extraordinary, special person. His relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam dictates and obviously would facilitate what we would think otherwise. And therefore, it's very difficult for understand. So imagine a Kodesh Baruch Hu spoke to any one of us and he told us to do anything, told us to speak to a rock. And the reason why he told us to speak to a rock was to produce water. And producing the water would feed the people. Kodesh Baruch Hu tells us to do anything. We would hesitate for a minute. We wouldn't hesitate. We would do anything and everything in our possible. We would fulfill the Ratzon Hashem, the will of God. If God gave us a clear instruction to do something, no question about it, we would do it. Now, could you imagine Moshe Rabbeinu, who is greater than any of us, being less obedient than us? Of course not. It's unimaginable. It's inconceivable. It's unconscionable. It's unexplained. And so therefore, that's what we're going to try to understand. Like, what was Moshe Rabbeinu thinking? What was the Avla? Why is there this Mida Keneged Mida, the punishment of him not doing that and then not going into Eretz Yisrael? So it stands to reason that this episode and Moshe and Aaron's mistake are far more complicated than how it appears at first, right? We have to obviously assume that there's the surface, then there's the drilling beneath the surface, and then there's the understanding it on a very different level. And for this reason, many of the different approaches that we learn in the commentary and the Perushim and the Mefarshim have taken a lot of different explanations as to how this enigmatic episode can be explained. So one particularly fascinating explanation, Perush, is that is shared by Rav Shimon Schwab, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Livracha, who died in 1995. He wrote a number of works, but famously on the Perush, on the Parsha, he wrote a sefer called Me'ein Beis HaShoeva. And in this beautiful sefer, he has different excerpts, different essays, different entries describing, explaining. Their erudition is exquisite. And so therefore, Schwab shares in this main base of Shoeva a beautiful idea. He writes that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu instructed Moshe Rabbeinu to bring the stick to the rock, That was the tzivoy. That was the command. Take the stick, take it to the rock. And when he assembled all the people, so he did not tell him to bring his own stick. Now, it seems to be almost like an unnecessary or outside the box, certainly overlooked, maybe unnoticed distinction. Because again, we've had over the past few parshios, the concept of amate or matos, his stick, his staff. It was Aaron's staff that budded almonds and was the flower to the exclusion and to the distinction of all of the other matos. These different tribal heads had their matos, had their staffs, had their sticks. And of course we know, as the Mishnah in the fifth chapter of Perkei Avos tells us, that Moshe Rabbeinu's staff, his stick, was one of the things that was fascinatingly, miraculously created at Bein HaShemashos of the first day of Shabbos. So Moshe Rabbeinu obviously had his stick. His stick was used for Kriyas Yam. So his stick, was staff, was used for the Makos, the plagues. We know that his staff was significant. Aaron has his own staff, and the tribal leaders have their matos, have their staff. So we know that the concept of having a staff is not unique. It's not singular. It's seemingly of the time people had staffs. That's what they had. So it seems as though that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Rishim and Shuvah, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded Moshe Rabbeinu to bring his staff, to bring a stick, bring your stick and take it to the rock, and you're going to speak to the rock, and speaking to the rock is going to procure water, and procuring the water is going to ease the complaining people's complaints. So it seems, he says, that he did not tell him to bring his own personal walking stick. He didn't say, bring your own mate. He didn't say, bring your own stick. Rather, he says, this was the staff, the stick of Aaron. He said, bring the stick, and we're going to see in the pasuk how that's found. How do we see in the pasukim that this is a legitimate perush and a legitimate explanation? He wasn't told to bring his own staff. Bring the staff, the stick, the walking device of Aaron, your brother. Why? Because we see that it had something very special to it. It had miraculously blossomed, as we just mentioned, as a heavenly sign. It was a siman from Shemaiah. Right, it was clear and obvious to everybody, all of the other tribal leaders, certainly clear to Moshe and Aaron, and that was the intent, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted it to be this way, but it was a clear and obvious heavenly sign of his status. What's his status? His status is that he is Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's chosen Kohen Gadol. He's the high priest. Who is who Hashem wants? And this is, of course, in the aftermath of Korach and his assembly and his entourage and his cohorts, their rebellion against Moshe and Aaron. What are you taking all this power for? This seems to be that it's nepotism. It's not equal. It's unfair. And so therefore they're challenging Aaron's right to the Kahuna Gedolah, to be the high priest. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, that's my choice. That's who I want. He's the high priest. He's the God. He's the high priest who's chosen by God. He's the guy. So the heavenly sign is the blossoming of Aaron's stick. Now you have to understand that this stick in this staff is essential, because we're going to see in a moment why that is, that it was essential. But just to remind ourselves of what happens in last week's parasha, kaches hamate, we of course know that in this week's parasha, it says, kaches hamate, he says, take the mate. He's like, no, it's the hay is hamate. What's the mate? Take the staff, take the, you know, walking stick. It doesn't take your stick. Kaches hamate, v'hakel es ha'eda ata ve'aron achicha, and you should assemble the people, the assembly of the Jewish people, and you should also take ata ve'aron, you and Aaron, achicha v'dibartem, and you should speak to Elasela, you should speak to the rock, le'enehem, in front of them, v'nosan ne'mov, and the water will be sprung and sprout forth, v'otzeso lehem mayim, minasela, and the water will come from the rock, and it's going to be v'shkisa, as ha'eda v'esbi'iram, it's going to then water them, feed them, nourish them, the kehila, the eda, the congregation, and their livestock. They're going to have what? They're going to have what to drink. Now, it's interesting that, again, it's not kach mata, it's kach hamata. Take the staff. Now, what's the staff? That's the staff, not your staff. The staff is the staff of Aaron, your brother's staff. So, which we, of course, know is that after the rebellion of Korach, Kadosh Baruch Hu commands Moshe to collect all of the staffs of the tribal leaders, including Aaron's, the leader of Shevet Levi. And he says, this is the one, whoever's staff is going to blossom, is going to be the Kohen Gadol, the identified divine leader's discerned choice. So Aaron's, as we just mentioned, his staff blossoms. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we of course know, instructs Moshe Rabbeinu to place Aaron's staff back in the Aaron, back in the ark, so that it can serve as a sign for the rebellious ones. Now we're going to see that as every one of the other tribal leaders were told by Moshe, good, this test has now proven Aaron is the person who is God's choice of who is going to be the high priest. Fine. Now that everybody has a clear and uninterrupted understanding of who's the choice person. So everybody come back and take your matos. Everybody come pick up your rods, take your sticks, take it all back. Bring it home. Now, why did they bring it home? Why would they take something that is a simon, that's a sign of their not being chosen? So there's a beautiful Rav Zalman Saretzkin in Aznaim L'Toyra where he explains, you know why they took it home? Even though the fact that they would take their rods home, why would they want to take their rods home? It's just simple Eitz Yovesh. It's just simple old dried out wood. Wood that is made, that testifies to the fact that they weren't chosen to be the high priest. Why should they want that? Says Rav Zalman Saretzkin, a beautiful idea. Says, you know why they wanted it? Even though it's true that they weren't chosen. But having those rods in their homes reminds them of how much and how badly they wanted it. You have to remember that anybody who was going to be chosen as the high priest, as the Kohen Gadol, that person not only was going to serve Mishkan, Beis HaMikdash, not only was the Kohen Gadol going to have this extraordinary job description, but from Shevet Levi we know that they weren't given a Nachalah portion in Eretz Yisrael. They were going to have their portion in their service of the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash, in the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's holy temple and holy places. So if that's true, think about what the tribal leaders were willing to go on the line and suggest that they're willing to give up. They're willing to give up their Nachalah and Eretz Yisrael because that's how much they yearned for and wanted that job of having service in the Beis HaMikdash, service in the Mishkan. So it wasn't that they took something. You know, sometimes if a person's not chosen, so they're very despondent, they're very sad, they want to just run away from it. It's like the second prize trophy. Who wants a second prize trophy? So it wasn't the second prize trophy. It says Rav Zalman Saretzkin that it was the simon, it was the sign of how much they wanted, how much they yearned for, how much they craved ruchnius, how much they wanted to serve in the mikdash. And so therefore that sign is something that would always motivate, animate there every single day. So we see that that was, sure enough, upon the aftermath of the blossoming of Aaron's rod, of his staff. So therefore, the other tribal leaders were told to take their staff away. But Aaron was told that he should leave his staff inside. He couldn't take his staff home. He wasn't able to take that as the number one first place trophy prize. No, no, no. Your blossomed staff was meant to remain inside the Aaron. It was meant to remain inside the ark. But it had a very specific purpose. Why did it have a specific purpose? That it should serve as a sign, as a simon for the rebellious ones. You know why? Because it's not going to be that this might be an end. Let's hope. But it's not. We know that history has proven otherwise. It's not that it's an end to the rebelliousness of the people. There's always going to be possibly rebellious people. We know that there's rebellious people. So you know what's going to happen? There's going to be a simon. There's going to be a sign. There's going to be an identifying object that's going to be then procured to be able to then teach the people, look, look, look. This is the simon of what happens when people are rebellious. You want to be Korach? Look, this is what's going to happen. This is the simon. You're not going to survive. You're not going to make it. You're not going to be successful. The simon is lie in wait, zayn still, be careful and conscientious. This is the Ratzon Hashem. And that's what the Pasuk told us. Vayemer Hashem al Moshe. This is from last week's parasha. Vayemer Hashem al Moshe. Hosheves mate Aaron. Again, you see the difference between mate and hamate. Put back, he says to Moshe. He says, put back the staff. Hoshev esam as mate Aaron lifnei ha'edos. L'mishmeres la'os l'vnei meri. L'vnei meri means keep it as a keepsake, as a sign for the rebellious ones, the meri, the muradim, the ones who are morud, the people that would be rebellious. Usachal. You know what would happen? If they didn't have this, their complaints would come and they would be in trouble. They would die. So if therefore they're going to look at this keepsake, the rebellious ones, their complaints against me will end. They will not die. And Shalom al Yisrael. Now when the people would challenge Moshe and Aaron's authority, they would be shown the stick. That's what would happen. Imagine if that would be in the case of disciplining children at home and in school, or you have wayward and rebellious people in our communities and around the world. All you got to do is, you don't have to say much. You don't need much rhetoric. You don't need to go to the United Nations with all this type of paperwork and documentation and proofs. All you need to do is bring one article. All you need to bring is a stick. Not any stick, but you don't just go to your backyard and pick up a stick from the the twigs, the branches from the shrubbery. You go and you take Aaron's stick from the Aaron. The Aaron ha'edus, you take the staff, you lift it up, you have to say no words. And Shalom al Yisrael, which proved that everything Moshe did was accordance to Ratzon Hashem. It wasn't that he was freestyling. It wasn't that he was pontificating of Yechidus, of his own individuality. He was doing what the Ratzon Hashem is. He was doing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded him to do. So if that's what he was being commanded to do, so that's what it was. So when the people complained, at Mei Meriva, Shulman Schwab explains that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu to take the stick and show it to Bnei Yisrael, which he did. That's it. Vayikach Moshe es hamatem lifnei Hashem ka'asher tzivohu. He showed it to them. But you should know, that's all he needed to do. He wasn't supposed to use the stick at all. Right? He wasn't supposed to speak to Bnei Yisrael. What was the speak to it? The speak to it, perhaps, was going to speak to it, meaning the people. You have to speak to the rock. You have to speak to the people. All you have to do is simply raise the staff. Vayikach Moshe, and he does that. It's a matter. Just hang tight for 1 second. Wait a minute. And you know what's going to happen? The mate, it's a symbol. He wasn't supposed to use the stick at all. He was simply told to show it to the people. And that showing of it to the people would silence the voices of protest and rebellion against him. And everything would have been fine. Sometimes you just need a simon. Sometimes you just need a reminder. However, Moshe Rabbeinu uses the stick for a different purpose, beating the rock with it to produce water. Vayore Moshe as the Odo. And Moshe Rabbeinu, he lifts his hand. He strikes the rock. Vayach es hasel, he strikes the rock. Bematehu, with his staff. Pa'amayim, with the staff twice. Vayetzu mayim rabim vatesh ta'eda. And the water in abundance gushes forth, and the congregation, the kila, and their livestock, they are vatashta, they are able to drink. So therefore, he's guilty of something, clearly, because he realizes, perhaps in aftermath, that that wasn't what he was supposed to do. All he was supposed to do was simply lift up the staff, show it to the people, and that would have been shalom al-Yisrael, that would have been sufficient, that would have been suffice. That would have been enough. But that wasn't what it was. Now, it's interesting. If you think about what happens, you know, the dinim, the laws of Hekdesh and Beis HaMikdash, there's something called Me'ilah. What's Me'ilah? There's an Isser Torah of Me'ilah which forbids somebody from misusing sacred property. That means if something was set aside, dedicated, donated, used by the Beis HaMikdash, so it has a status of Kodesh. So once it's Ma'ilah the Kodesh, it's Ein Moridin. You can't have something, for example, of a spoon that was then dedicated to the Mikdash and is meant for offering and sacrifices and service of Avodas Hashem, and then just stam willy nilly, you take that same spoon back and you bring it for the use of stam motzi shabbos malav malka of eating ice cream with it. That's not how it works. So there's an issur, there's a prohibition of me'ila, which forbids misusing sacred property. And this is why Kadosh Baruch Hu announces his punishment for Moshe Rabbeinu's mistake. He says, what does the pasuk say? We see that it's from Parshas Ha'azinu, referring to the violation of Me'ila, which they committed. The pasuk says, Al asher ma'altem. In the review, again, we know that Sefer Devarim is the review of all the four previous books of the Torah. And in Parshas Ha'azinu, we're up to where the review is in Parshas Ba'amidbar, where we find ourselves right now in these parshios of Parshas Chukas, and the events of Mei Meriva, the waters of strife, where Moshe strikes the rock. So then Parshas Ha'azinu says, you know why? You know why you were punished, you and Aaron, asher? Ma'altem, because you betrayed me. Ma'altem, when you read that pasuk, we don't know that those words mean me'ila, but if you actually just has the mashmois of, it's there, ma'altem bi, you betrayed me, and they betrayed HaKadosh Baruch Hu al yidei the word me'ila, ma'altem bi, betrayed me by violating this sacred, holy stick, this Cheftza, this item, this article that was meant to be used, it was a holy matter. Once it was put in the Mikdash, once it was put in the Aron, once it was meant to be left there, Beis HaMikdash, Mishkan, it's Me'ilah. So Atem, Asher, Ma'altem, Bi B'Soich B'nei Yisrael, B'mei Merivas Kodesh, B'Marit B'Midbar Sin, Al Asher, L'Kidashtem, Oisi, B'Soich B'nei Yisrael. You had a chance to be Mekai Hashem Shemayim in such a way, and that's not what happened. But it's ma'altem bi. You used me'ilah. You're in violation of this me'ilah, of this violation of this prohibition. And so therefore, this is how the Torah describes in Parshas Ha'azinu what it is they were in violation of. So we see that it was just necessary just to show it. Just if you think about the power of just simply showing something that has historical prominence and what it's meant to reverberate, it's a lesson very, very strong in and of itself. But this is actually interesting. If you think about it, is we've always wondered, like, what was Aaron's role? Why was Aaron punished? Aaron dies in this week's parsha. The people mourn for him. They bewail him 30 days. A very dramatic scene where Moshe and Elazar, the son of Aaron, together, they go up with Aaron and he dies in Har Hahor. And it's a very dramatic scene in Chumash. But why is he included in this punishment? The pasuk tells us that he doesn't have the right to go into Eretz Yisrael. So the answer is that as this was his stick, he was held responsible for its misuse. Now, it's interesting also, if you think about that, is that it could be that somebody else will misuse inappropriately something that belongs to you, something that's yours. But at the end of the day, if it's yours, it's your possession, you have to take ownership, you have to take responsibility for it. And so therefore, so it's not only that Moshe Rabbeinu, he himself did it, and he used it, and he was in violation, it's a prohibition, it's an issur in the Torah, but because of the fact that Aaron was the owner of it, he was the prized possession, a property personnel of it, so therefore he's also held responsible, and that's what we understand his role is. And Rav Shimon Schwab further, he explains that Moshe and Aaron were punished for angrily scolding the people. Again, this is a lot of other Perushim explain this as well, that it wasn't just that Aaron was responsible because it was his, which of course that's one explanation, because Asher Ma'altim B means that it was Kodesh, it was sanctified, it was unified, it was singular, and it was set aside. So if that's the case, and Aaron felt responsible, there are others who explain that there was another reason. They were angry. They scolded the people before hitting the rock. He didn't have to even say anything to the people. They said, rebels, you know, Shimuno ha'ma'orim, listen now, you rebellious ones, right? The Moshe says, they gathered all the people. Listen, Chevra sent an email, a WhatsApp, you know, a text message. Come, Chevra, kimtarayin around to the rock. And he says, El Pnei HaSela, V'yamr lehem, Shimunam ha'ma'orim. Listen up here, you rebels. Listen, this is, they're scolding them. They're telling them. They don't have to say a word. All they have to do is show the staff. Minat selo hazeh noitzim lechemayim. Can we draw water for you from this rock? Right? This is where they themselves were additionally, says Rishim and Schwab and others, that that's where they were additionally punished. And Kodesh Baruch had instructed Moshe simply to show the people the staff, which should have had the effect of silencing their complaints and protests. That's what we learned in last week's parsha. That's the whole reason why Moshe commanded Aaron to keep the staff in the Aaron Ha'edus, because for this very moment, this is the very reason why it was necessary, because there's going to be people who are going to be rebellious. There are people that are going to protest. There are people that are going to voice complaints. There are people that are going to be very difficult. And you know what you do with the Moirim? You know what you do with the difficult people? You show them this simon, this sign. But Moshe and Aaron, it seems, did not trust that the staff would have the effect. Maybe they were worried about it. They said, oh, really? That staff is really going to have the effect? So what they did is they angrily called the people Moirim. They chastised them. They scolded them, even after showing them the stick. Give it a minute. Maybe the stick needed it. They looked at it. Oh, what's the stick? What's this all about? So then they're going to change what's going to be. But no, that's not what happened. And it was only after, and it was for this reason that they were punished. Meaning rather than trusting that the sight of the miraculous staff, this miracle that they could see in front of them would quell the nation's rebellion. So Moshe and Aaron, instead, they continued berating the people. And even after producing the staff, HaKadosh Baruch Hu thus punished them and decreed that they're not going to enter into Eretz Yisrael. They did not need to do that. That was not necessary for them. It wasn't necessary for this story. And it certainly was not what was going to be the most successful. I think one of the takeaway empowering lessons that we learn here is, first of all, not only is we take ownership for the things that are ours, sometimes we like to dismiss ourselves, extricate ourselves from situation and service and circumstance, whether it's the avla, the sin of Lashon Hara. A person says, as I'm standing around a group of people on Shabbos, after davening at the Kiddush, and people are speaking about whatever miscellaneous zachen they're speaking about, and it then enters into a territory of ill discussion. It's Lashon Hara, and a person says, I'll take my little flaps of my ears, lobes, and I place them into my ear because I don't want to be makabel the Lashon Hara about the chazan, the rabbi, the food, the restaurant, the business, the weather. I don't want to speak about my bunkmate, my seatmate. I don't need to speak negatively. But at the end of the day, you extricate yourself, but at the end of the day, you didn't leave the scene. You were part of it. Maybe you were Misayel Dvaraveir. We don't like to take responsibility for the things that we need to take responsibility for. So what we understand is I might not be the one that pulls the trigger, might be the guy that pushes the button. I might not be the person that does the actual avla, but it could be that I have incited. It could be that I have vilified. It could be that I participated. That's number one. That Moshe and Aaron, wasn't just Moshe, but Aaron, not only because of the fact that they chastise and berate them, but it's also that Moshe Rabbeinu, we understand, has a role because it just was his. That's number one. But what we understand here is the power of the simon. It's the power of the sign. And the power of the sign is understood. It's the measure of things, but more importantly, it's the measure of man. The measure of man is the symbol that we all are. It's not just that the power of the stick, imagine the power of the inanimate stick, the staff, which is going to be just simply that which was going to be shown to the people. And now the people are going to look at that and they're going to say, you know what, my complaints really are unnecessary. My complaints are really unfounded. My complaints are really just negative HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Imagine al achas kama v'kama, all the more so, how much more power when we think about the power of the yachad, the power of the individual, the power of the singular person. Every single one of us, not a stick, a person, our mere presence is meant to remind the world of the goodness of people, of the virtue, of the value of humanity, but most importantly, the virtue and the value of the Torah, of what it means to be a law-abiding, Torah-observant, good Jew, a person who follows the precepts of the Torah faithfully, who is a walking Kiddush Hashem. You see, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted Moshe Rabbeinu to do was to provide the ultimate Kiddush Hashem. And the ultimate Kiddush Hashem was going to be just simply showing a Heftza of Nes, an article of miracle. And that would have been sufficient. That would have been enough. Perhaps that in addition to it just being that this Mateh would have done what it needed to do, maybe even something greater would have been just simply every single person, every individual is a symbol that can stand before an Eda, can stand before a populace, can stand before a population of people, whether it's within our community, whether it's within your families, whether it's outside of your community, outside of your families, in the world at large, everybody, people are watching. And you might not ever even realize how much people are watching, but the way you talk, the way you deal with others in business, the way you order food from a restaurant, the way you control yourself when you're standing in line somewhere and it's just taking a little bit longer, the way you greet the grocer at the grocery store, the way you are standing at the gas station and you see another person pumping gas and you throw them a smile, you're wearing a yarmulke, you look like a Bas Yisrael, you're dressed as a Jew, you are acting as you must. And then you know what happens? There's an enormous Kiddush Hashem. Any complaint that anybody would have, you don't know that if the person you see at the grocery store, for example, is somebody who thinks unkindly about Jews, Orthodox Jews, observant Jews, but Jews bichlal, because you can't hide the fact that you're Jewish. Hitler yamach shemo v'zichro, he did not distinguish between Orthodox Hasidim and irreligious Jews. A Jew is a Jew is a Jew. He didn't make a distinction. Could you? So you have no idea that the person you're walking past in the grocery store, they might be lobbing complaints on their own social media networks. They might be sharing articles of ill about Eretz Yisrael, about the behaviors of Jews, so on and so forth. And they're walking right past you. Look how you look. And they're walking right past you. And they're lobbying complaints about us. And we have no idea who they are. They're going shopping for their cupboards. They're looking for their Cheerios and their Skippy peanut butter and their loaves of bread, the cartons of milk, they're going for their food. They're not interested in having a discourse. You don't know what their private lives are, but probably they're Instagramming and they're Facebooking and they're forwarding articles. They're doing all types of things. Now what happens? They have complaints. Your mere presence, assuming your mere presence is aligned with what we expect the mere presence to be. So who knows? Maybe someone's going to look at that person, look at you and look at me and say, wow, that was a nice guy. That was a wonderful woman. They were very pleasant and kind. They were very generous. They let me go in front of them. They got a smile. They helped you helped that person put their luggage on top of, you know, the overhead compartment on an airplane. I run when I'm flying and I see somebody struggling to put their bags over on top. I put my yarmulke into yarmulke position number one. There's different positions. I go yarmulke position number one. I make sure that everybody can see yarmulke position number one. And I say, sure, can I give you a hand? Can I place it on the overhead bin? And I make it clear that everybody should see that I'm a Jew and I'm an Orthodox Jew. You know why? Who knows who's standing there? Thank you so much, sir. It's not just thank you so much, sir. It's thank you so much, Orthodox Jewish sir. And now your mere presence resonates and calculates a different definition of maybe who Orthodox Jews are and who we're supposed to be. So that's a very important lesson to learn from this. A very important lesson to learn from this. If this is what was going to be the power of an inanimate object, if this is going to be the power of this staff, how much more so would it have been the power? How much is it for us to understand the power of our own selves just by being and living and engaging as we're supposed to? A super, super powerful way of thinking about how this parish, how this explanation resonates deeply in our lives. It's reminding me of a story which I think many of you maybe have heard. If you haven't, you've forgotten, but it was a story that certainly made news in November of 2013. And there was an article actually that was written about this unbelievable person who I've never met and I don't know. And if it's a Kiddush Hashem for me, then certainly it's a Kiddush Hashem for everybody, non-Jews alike, non-religious Jews, even Orthodox Jews. It's a tremendous Kiddush Hashem. There's an article that was written, and the name of the article, the title of the article was called The $98,000 Rabbi. Maybe you'll remember that there's a tremendous Kiddush Hashem in New Haven, Connecticut, which reveals the power of living Jewishly. That's like the subtitle of the article, the power of living Jewishly. It's extraordinary. Like the Mateh HaMateh is the power of what will quell the rebellious ones. The power of living Jewishly, it's unbelievable. The $98,000 Rambam, if you remember, so you know the people, I don't know how much people use it today, but I still think they do. The age of Craigslist and eBay and online shopping selling and buying. So it's not unusual to find household goods for a bargain. That's what Craigslist is. But for this New Haven, Connecticut rabbi, Rabbi Noach Muroff, I'm not sure if I'm saying his last name even right, Muroff. So there was an office desk that, if you remember, he bought. He bought through the website for $200, and it turned out to be an investment with incredible dividends. You invest something, you have what businessmen call the ROI. What's your return on your investment? I invest $100. I want to know that in 18 months, it's going to be $1,000 or more. So when he came home after his purchase, Muroff and his wife, they found that the desk would simply not fit through the door of the office, that he wanted to put it in his home. So it was like just slightly off. You know, when you buy something, you're hoping that the table is going to fit, you're hoping that the desk is going to fit, you're hoping that the chairs are going to come in, and you realize, hey, you have to like open the door, take it down, the lanai, whatever it is that you got to do, but by a fraction of an inch. Now, when they took the desk apart to then reassemble it, like IKEA style, take it apart, reassemble it, put it in the room that you want it in, so they discovered a bag. And the bag, they didn't know what it was doing there, they didn't know what was in there, but they saw that there was something that was in this bag. And in this bag, they opened it up, and they saw, again, remember, they already purchased it. They already paid them, the owner, $200. It was now theirs. Now, Pialocha, like, it's theirs. Every bit of it, the screws, the drawers, the handles, and so it would seem, the bag. But what was in this bag was the previous owner's inheritance, their Yerusha. How much was in this bag? They counted it to their bewilderment, $98,000. And it wasn't a check. It was wads of hundreds, bank tied hundreds, $98,000 cash in this bag. This Yerusha of this person to whom they sold. And that's unbelievable. Now, Muroff is a teacher, is a Rebbe in Yeshiva of New Haven. So he was interviewed, obviously, because you know the end of the story, but he was interviewed at a number of news stations, but he told the local news station right away, my wife and I, they looked at each other, and they said, we can't keep this money. Who wouldn't be happy to keep the money? It's free money, but it's not their money. So then they called the original owner to return the bag. So the owner was stunned beyond speech. She simply didn't know what to say. She had hidden away the money in the desk and she couldn't find it once it slipped behind the drawer where it remained stuck. You know, you put something in the drawer and it slides behind the drawer. She simply didn't know where it went. She didn't know what happened to it. She completely, utterly forgot about it. So after Muroff and his wife returned the money, they received the following note from the previous owner. Could you imagine getting that call? This person wasn't Jewish. They get the call that here's your bag of money. We Jews sometimes are castigated as people who are, let's just say it nicely, not so honest, which is obviously not true and certainly not fair. There's yechidim that maybe act that way, but it's not fair. It's not fair to lump every Jew. Jews are very honest and very genuine and very pious. Most. You have yechidim in every faith, in every discipline, sadly. But what happens when you have an Orthodox yarmulke-wearing Jew and a Bas Yisrael, he and she, they come back and they return the money, and that's not ours. That's not what we bought. That is your Yerusha. That's your inheritance. Listen to this little note that this owner sends. She said, and I quote, I cannot thank you enough for your honesty and for your integrity. I do not think there are too many people in this world that would have done what you did by calling me. I do like to believe that there are still good people left in this crazy world that we live in. And you both certainly are two of them. Wow. Unbelievable. In a crazy world, that was in 2013, the crazy world we live in now seems crazier than ever craziness before. With a single decision that most people probably wouldn't have made, Jewish, not Jewish, Rabbi Mrs. Muroff exemplified one of the highest precepts in Judaism, of our faith. Klal Yisrael depends on it. We need this. It's Kiddush Hashem, to be able to sanctify Hashem's name through righteous and praiseworthy acts, just the way we live our lives, just by what we do. Now, when the Jewish people accepted the Torah at Har Sinai, we were not only taking on 613 precepts contained that were inside the written scroll, if you will. We were also agreeing to act as a Kadosh Baruch Hu's representatives to the rest of the world, his PR team. We were meant to represent him. Our actions, when guided by the Torah, is meant to set an example for the rest of the community, the rest of humanity, for how we should live our lives. It's not just here's your Torah, live your laws, do what you need to do, shake your lulav, eat your matzah, sit in Hatzam Sukkis, light your Hanukkah candles, have a Purim Suda, keep Shabbos, Taras HaMishpacha, keep kosher. That is obvious. But we were also meant to be the representatives, the ambassadors, the emissaries of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the entire world, to the entire humanity, how we're supposed to live our lives. But every act of Kiddush Hashem we do has the tremendous power to offset these negative messages and to imbue the world around us with Kiddusha, with holiness. And so every single time we make the choice to act with decency, every single time we make the choice to act with kindness, to act with respect, every single time we do the right thing, even when it's difficult, even when it's hard, even when it's a challenge, even when it challenges every bit of us, we're showing the world what human beings are truly, ultimately capable of. And that's our charge. And that's our lesson this morning as we've learned this beautiful lesson of Shimon Schwab, of Hamateh, of what this staff was meant to remind us of. What is our potential? Who we are as individuals, who we are as a community, what we are capable of as a people to live our lives as they're meant to be lived, to inspire others as we ourselves are living inspired lives each and every day. Okay, I'm going to leave you with that lesson, powerful and impactful, meaningful, and hopefully inspirational, uplifting. And that which inspires our day and every day, and hopefully inspires our up-and-coming Shabbos. I wish everybody a wonderful Thursday. I thank you all for tuning in via the Facebook live stream, our Boca Jewish Center Zoom room. I wish everybody a healthy, a happy, beautiful day, and a wonderful, inspirational, uplifted, and a beautiful Shabbos Kodesh. Be blessed, everyone.